Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn with Chrissy Pease in our Milwaukee studios. On the Ideas Network, you hear about topics big and small. Big topic coming up next hour, the Civil War. It's why you listen, and it is why you contribute. And your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is quite frankly crucial because we're having a half the time pledge drive.
Yeah, you told us you wanted more programming with less on-air fundraising. We understand. So we've cut the pledge drive in half. 12 days. Now we're doing 6 days. So please give now, WPR.org, or call 888-202-2552.
And Chrissy, last hour the goal was what?
It was 60, and we got 66.
All right. Thank you. Thanks very much. We really appreciate all of your pledges. Thank you for your pledges. We need those pledges. Our goal is to get 60 more pledges this hour. We have 60 Civil War fans in this audience, I think. Your gift ensures the programs that you enjoy will be here every day on Wisconsin Public Radio.
And because we're trying to accomplish this drive in just half the time of a normal fall drive, we're asking you not to delay. These goals are bigger than usual because we have fewer days to ask for your support, quite frankly. So please give now. Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
The Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio is really like a statewide town hall. I think of it that way. In addition to thinking of, because somebody told me years ago, I listened to you while I'm in the barn milking the cows, and I frequently have that image in my mind, but I also think about people at a town hall like the Iowa caucuses. People are there and they're debating issues, and it's good. It's very good. It's where people come together to hear about topics and issues that they care about, to ask questions, to share information.
It's like a community, and you benefit from it. So we're asking you to help pay for it, please. Your support is a very important piece of what makes the Ideas Network possible. Be a part of this great tradition with your gift, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's actually a pretty simple process. It takes about 2 minutes of your time, give or take a few seconds. You tell us your name, contact information, how much you want to give, and how you would like to pay. You can use your credit card. It saves time and postage and paper and puts your money to work right away. No matter how you choose to give or how much, take those 2 minutes right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And just a moment after I'm done talking, we'll be talking with Lance Hertigan about the sesquicentennial of the Civil War. We've done a lot of shows on this year, and you've all been really responsive, so let's do it again. Discussions like this are possible because of your financial support, so give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We not only did a lot of shows, we went to Gettysburg. It was a great trip to Gettysburg. You give to WPR to support the programs, and as an added incentive for your good deed, we have something, and the three of us are big history buffs. We have, and I know you are too, so we have something very, very special for you this hour.
It's not your normal pledge incentive. You can receive Ken Burns' Civil War calendar when you donate $75 or more.
Oh, there it is.
Give now any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and ask for Ken Burns' Civil War calendar as your thank you gift when you give $75. And Kathleen, if I can say, if you buy one Civil War calendar for the year 2012, this one's it.
Yes, I love that. Yes, you should. Rhonda's got a copy there. She's holding it up. It just came in the mail today, I guess. We've seen pictures.
It's
a beautiful calendar. Plus, it's filled with information, so it's an educational tool for those of us who are walking down the Civil War sesquicentennial.
We've got one taker so far.
Great, thanks. It's $75, so you're supporting conversations about the Civil War. Our next guest is fabulous. And I know many of you will be on a journey of learning more as we celebrate this important anniversary. Today we're asking you to take a step to step off that on that path and join other members by making a contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio.
And your gift ensures that programs such as this one about the sesquicentennial of the Civil War they're available for you and also for the next person to discover. You really need to pay it forward. So give right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we're looking for how many pledges?
59.
Oh, 59.
We're on our way. We've got a pledge.
We have one. That's what it takes. It takes one. And then it takes one and one and one and one. It's amazing what, I know it's trite to say this, but it is amazing what one person can do.
Oh,
it's just amazing what one person can do. I think about that every time I do this show, that it's just remarkable. Would you pledge now? WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And it's our Half the Time pledge drive. If you've heard us mention that, it means we're shortening it from 12 days to 6. So your donation helps make it a success and keep the programs on the air instead of us asking for money. Give now. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Ask for Ken Burns' Civil War calendar with your pledge of $75. Ken Burns' Civil War calendar. The pictures are extraordinary, including a photograph of Abraham Lincoln. It would be a good thing to have in your house this year. Pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thank you, Chrissy.
You're welcome, Kathleen.
Thank you, everybody, for pledging. Thank you for listening to these important conversations. Thank you for going to Gettysburg with us. Thank you so much. Lance Hertigan is our guest now. He is chair of the Wisconsin Civil War 150th Commission, former director of the Institute of Civil War Studies at Carroll University, author of Those Damned Black Hats, The Iron Brigade in the Gettysburg Campaign. And he's here to talk about some of the celebrations surrounding Wisconsin's participation in the Civil War and to give us some information about the large number of soldiers, 90,000 Wisconsin soldiers from a state population of 775,000 fought in the Civil War, and many of them died. Many of them died at Gettysburg. We're going to talk about what Wisconsin was like, what motivated young people to go into the war, some of the conversations he's had with grandchildren of those who fought in the Civil War, who went on to become, or children, heroes during World War II. Lance is just a He's got so much information. He's a great guy. So he is with us, and we'll be welcoming phone calls for regular conversation here at 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Hello, Lance. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Good to talk to you.
Yeah, great to have you here. I think it was John Gerda, a Milwaukee historian, who talked about Wisconsin being a hotbed of abolitionism back in the 1860s. Is that why people signed up in Wisconsin to go fight in the Civil War or not?
No, actually, abolitionism obviously was a factor in the reason many soldiers went to war, but the bulk of them, at the beginning of the war at least, went to preserve the Union. They felt that the Southern attempt to break the Union really was an attack on their grandfathers and great-grandfathers who created the Union. You have to remember, it was less than a century before the country was formed. So they went off for that.
Whoops, I'm sorry. Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Sorry. I'm sorry. There was just it was my fault here. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, basically, they went off to war to preserve the Union because they felt that the country was attacked by the rebellion. As the war went on, of course, they began to look into the face of slavery, and I think the Wisconsin soldiers thought it was basically such an unfair system that someone who would make something, for example, a carpenter, and yet did not own what he had built. And, of course, as the war went on, they began to realize that they were on a great crusade to end slavery in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an evolving thing. I don't think at the beginning it changed over the course of the war.
And, Lance, it seems to me as though 90,000 people from a state of 775,000 is huge. Were there more from Wisconsin than from other states?
Yeah, in the list of states, we rank about fifth, if my memory serves.
Oh, my.
You know, on the basis of number of soldiers sent and against population, we were not a large state. Now, Michigan actually was a little bit smaller than we are at the time in population, and they didn't send as many soldiers as we did. So we had actually 91,000, and of course of that, about 12,000 died. And of that, about 3,000 actually died of combat injuries. The rest died of smallpox and measles and all those diseases they didn't know anything about.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you look at the amount of traveling and not very good food or very much food that these soldiers had, it's a wonder that a lot more didn't just die on the way to get to the next battle.
Well, I think it affected them later in life, too. Of course, you know, the hardship of the 4 years that they were in combat, you know, impacted on their health the rest of their days. It is common to read, you know, soldiers who had a bullet that was never taken out because they didn't know how. So you walked around with a bullet wound in you, and you know, some of those had open wounds that they had to treat and bandage every day. And that went on for 10, 20 years. And, of course, a lot of them died young.
Mm-hmm. What about the African-American community, American Indians from Wisconsin? Did they fight?
More than you think. I think the record has been misunderstood. A lot of the Native American peoples went into the war and they identified themselves as French Canadian, and of course I'm talking about the French and the Indian combinations. So I think there were a lot more of them than normally people say. About 500-600 Native Americans fought in the Civil War in Wisconsin regiments. I think that number is closer to 5,000. But they didn't always enlist as, well, they weren't allowed to until 1863 to enlist as Native Americans.
Mm-hmm.
African Americans now show up all over in Wisconsin regiments. They come out of these small settlements of runaways and free blacks in Cheyenne Valley and one near, you know, Lancaster and a couple different settlements. And they pop up in regiments well before the Glory Regiment, the 54th Mass. So I think that's another record. The trouble is that the written files are so thin. Much of it is anecdotal. So we probably will never know. But they certainly contributed. I know in the Iron Brigade there's at least 10 African-Americans in the five regiments.
The last time we did a show with you, I was amazed the number of people who called in who had personal stories, and I was flabbergasted by the number of stories at the Wisconsin Historical Society, the letters, etc., that have been gathered. What a rich source of information about this important time in American history. And I know that you've had conversations that there are people who really you took to your heart after you heard about their stories and you've been in touch with some of their ancestors.
Yeah, it's you know, I do a lot of speaking, of course, because I'm the chair and because of my interest in the Civil War. And if I go into, say, I went into Baraboo to the Civil War Roundtable group at Baraboo, and two men, descendants of men that I actually wrote about, came up and introduced themselves and gave me some letters that they had that I hadn't seen. And this goes on all the time. I routinely will pick up a new set of letters or a photograph probably every 10 days, 3-4 times a month. And it goes on and on. And when you know, it's a strange sensation. Luckily, sometimes I'm able to actually give them material that they haven't seen about their ancestors. It occurred in a case of a young Irish private who was the son of a Civil War veteran, and he was unaware of his father's Civil War experience. Dad had died very young. And I was able to present him literally with 150 typed pages of material that his dad had written about his war experiences. And, you know, he started to read through those, and he got kind of misty-eyed about it. And, you know, that's what it's all about. It really feels good for me when I can do that, and I can keep the memory of some of that stuff alive, because it certainly is worth remembering. And so much of it keeps surfacing. You know, the war keeps evolving and changing and based on this material.
Where did those 150 pages go? Why did his son not see them?
Well, what had happened is the soldier, whose name was James Sullivan, and he was in Company K of the 6th Wisconsin, after the war he began to write about his war memoirs in local newspapers like the Mauston, Wisconsin Star, Milwaukee Sunday Telegraph, and there was he did like these 20 or 30 articles that had never been gathered, and we had gathered them and transcribed them, and was able to present them to James Fitzpatrick Sullivan, which is his son.
Oh, I can't imagine having the honor of being able to do that, to present that. There's nothing better than that.
You know, it's It is an honor, and it gives me great pleasure to be able to provide that information. I had a man from Maryland looking for some of the stuff on his great-grandfather, who was a 7th Wisconsin soldier killed at Antietam. And I actually found an account of the man who was in the hospital with him, wounded at the same time, and they were together on a blanket. And he wrote about his, seeing his friend die. And then I was able to pass that on to the descendant. You know, it's just, it is an honor to be able to pick that stuff up, and it always it makes it worthwhile for me.
Yeah. One of the things that, and I will forever be asking this question, but I know that you've asked this question and you've heard stories about Union soldiers giving acts of kindness to Confederate soldiers and how they could be really good to each other and then get on the battlefield and kill each other. I guess I've never been able to process that very well, Lance.
Well, I think they're Americans, you know, and they had a common language, common religion, common past history. At Gettysburg, for example, there's a story of a wounded Wisconsin soldier. He's in a basement being treated, and a Confederate officer comes in because the town was captured on the first day and looked around, and the officer pulled out his canteen and began to give drinks to the wounded soldiers. And the first one he gave it was to a Union soldier, and the soldier said, "But I'm a Yankee." And he said, "We're all Americans now." And or at least that's the way they remembered it. And he, you know, those, so those acts of kindness go on all the time. Between the shooting, they always were, they would exchange papers and coffee and tobacco. And
oh, my goodness.
You know, and sometimes they would have fist fights in the middle of a battle. Both sides would stop shooting. And, you know, they had, what had happened is, the anger between them got beyond the point of killing. It was, they had to do it with their fists. And both sides would cheer, and then at the end, the two of them, they called it a draw, and they shook hands, and the two soldiers went back to the lines, and the shooting started again. That was at Petersburg in 1864.
Lance Hurdigan is our guest this hour, chair of the Wisconsin Civil War 150th Commission, former director of the Institute of Civil War Studies at Carroll University, and author, and we have yet to talk about the Iron Brigade, those damn black hats, the Iron Brigade in the Gettysburg campaign. And if you go to Gettysburg, your guide will point out, take you to the commemoration, and will also tell you about the work of the Iron Brigade. Here's our phone number. If you'd like to join our conversation, we'd love to hear from you. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, for you to talk with Lance. We're also in a pledge drive. It's this short pledge drive. And for those of you who are Civil War buffs, and many of you are, we do have as a thank you gift, if you can pledge $75 or more, Ken Burns, the Civil War 2012 Sesquicentennial Calendar. It is a beautiful calendar. It's got a lot of rare pictures in it, and of course the dates of all the major battles, and it's a sight to behold. So please make your pledge this hour, you Civil War people, and you'll get the, as an appreciation gift, Ken Burns Civil War Sesquicentennial Calendar. I like that premium. I think it's really good. All right, two phone calls for Lance in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls. John in Eagle River. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good.
Good.
Two quick questions. There's a road up here called Military Road that runs along the Nicolet National Forest, and I've heard that it runs from Lake Superior all the way down through Green Bay and Milwaukee and Chicago. Do you know what it was used for, if it was used ever? And the other question I have is, given the current political climate, has the Civil War really ended?
Well, there's a question, Lance. Can't wait to hear the answer. Not from this audience, sir.
Okay, basically, the military road probably was engineered and laid out by the U.S. government engineering corps sometime in Wisconsin's early beginnings. One of the men involved in laying out those roads, surveying them, was a man named Jefferson Davis from Mississippi, who, of course, ended up being the Confederate president. He spent 2 years at Fort Crawford at Prairie du Chien.
Oh, my.
And was involved in the capture of Black Hawk. He took Black Hawk as a prisoner back to St. Louis. And somebody said that if he hadn't been president of the Confederacy, he would be one of Wisconsin's most famous pioneers because he laid out a lot of the roads. And I suspect the military road you're talking about was one that he had some. I know he had that portion from Milwaukee to Green Bay and then to Portage and then to Prairie du Chien. As for the political climate, I don't think the Civil War ended in the sense that we still are debating the issues of what the war was about. For example, we still, you know, we're arguing about what it means to be an American citizen, our race relations, the rights of states' rights, and all of that. You know, we I think that keeps evolving. I don't think there's ever an end to it. So I don't know if I want to say the Civil War is continuing. I think we're still trying to determine what those issues are and how to define them.
Well,
I don't
John,
know if that's a satisfactory answer.
I think it's great. John, you certainly made the right call today.
Oh, thank you.
I got me into trouble right off the bat. Anyway,
by the way.
What's it?
Did the military road ever get used?
Oh, yeah. It was actually meant to be a roadway. You mean, did they haul troops on it? Not in the sense
that we think of today. Troops and supplies and stuff.
Yeah, they hauled supplies. It was a way to connect different areas. Of course, there was Fort Howard at Green Bay, and then there was Portage. You know, there was the fort there, and there was another one at Crawford and in Milwaukee. So all of those points connected. I think I'm talking in the 1830s, when it was originally laid out. And there's different sections of it, and I don't know the details of it. Just a general sense, because I'm interested in Jefferson Davis in Wisconsin.
Mm. I am too. I'd like to know more about him. Thank you very much for the call, John. Dale in Franklin. Hi, Dale.
Hi. Lance, in reading your book and several others, I get the feeling that the Iron Brigade was used in the center of the Union lines quite often.
Yeah, that's true. You mean, why did it happen? one soldier said we are used by our generals because of that. They know we will fight. The second thing is that they were so battered by the middle of the war they probably should have been pulled off the line. But, you know, they were a long way from home, and they didn't have anybody really to speak for them. So they ended up, is it lucky to be in the key area of major battles? Probably a little of both. But they certainly earned a very strong reputation for their ability to fight, and they were well-disciplined troops. I think the Iron Brigade was the best brigade in the whole Civil War, North or South.
Do you really?
Yeah, I really do. They went all through the war. The Gettysburg, they were just about annihilated. But then they were filled up with drafted men and bounty men. You know, a bounty man, that's somebody who takes money to enlist.
Right.
And by the end of the, you know, they served all the way to the end of the war, and we're at Appomattox Courthouse when Lee surrendered.
Oh, and how did they get the name?
I'm sorry?
How did they get the name, the Iron Brigade?
Well, they first were known as the Black Hat Brigade because they were issued these pilgrim-like felt black hats. And the reason they got them is because the hats were out of style and old-fashioned, and, of course, all the fancy little caps went to the Eastern regiments.
Isn't that the way always? That continues.
You can just see that, right?
Yeah.
They dumped all the stuff that was in the quartermaster stores for 10 years on the Iron Brigade, on the Western boys, the Wisconsin and Indiana troops. But, we kind of liked those hats because it made us look taller. One soldier said they looked like giants in their black hats. They were big, strapping frontier kids. And at South Mountain on September 14, 1862, as the brigade was fighting up the National Road, General McClellan sustained them. He said that he asked, who are those men on the road? And somebody said, they're the Western soldiers. And he said, why, they seem to be made of iron. And the story is that it was overheard by a correspondent for an Ohio newspaper who a few days later wrote about the Iron Brigade of the West. And so that's where the name came from. There's a dozen stories, but I think the truth of the matter is that was the first one.
I love your stories. Wouldn't you love to have all the information he has about the Civil War? Lance, he's a treasure in the state as well. Lance Hertigan, chair of the Wisconsin Civil War 150th Commission, former director of the Institute of Civil War Studies at Carroll University, author of Those Damn Black Hats, The Iron Brigade in the Gettysburg Campaign. Well, I'm Kathleen Dunn. Chrissy Peace is with me, and we're in our Half the Time Pledge Drive. You, of course, rely on Wisconsin Public Radio to give you conversations like this. You're not going to find this anywhere else, and it's just, you have these conversations, and you think, I'm so glad to be able to be talking about the Wisconsin's sesquicentennial marking of the Civil War and the contribution of the soldiers in the state and the rich history here. Oh, what we engage our minds with. Just great conversations. So every day. And we rely on the money that you give to keep the news and these kinds of discussions going. Chrissy, hello.
Hi, Kathleen. Hello, Wisconsin Public Radio listeners. We're here to raise the money for the programs you rely on, but we're doing it in just 6 days instead of the usual 12. So please make your pledge of any amount right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're asking you to help pay for the programs you depend on. Help us raise those funds in just half the days of a normal fall drive, 6 instead of 12. And we're looking for how many more pledges?
51,
all
please.
Right. All right, 51 in about 7 minutes. Thank you. And we can do that. Make your pledge now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And not along in agreement, if this next statement applies to you, you may have found yourself hovering near the radio, drawn into a great discussion. You need to get somewhere, but that discussion is just so interesting. You appreciate the guest knowledge and the caller's questions, the interviewer's questions, and everyone's views. Because that's happened to you, it's happened to me, it's happened to Kathleen. Make your pledge of support right now, WPR.org. Or 888-202-2552.
And we have, at this particular hour, received a great deal of thought, actually. Rhonda really thought about this hour. And we started, actually, with a calendar, Ken Burns' calendar, because we can give you thank you gifts. And because of all the shows we've done on the Civil War and the trip that we took to Washington and to Gettysburg, we thought this would be a wonderful thank you gift. It's Ken Burns' Civil War calendar, which has really extraordinary pictures. You look at the picture, I'm looking at one now of President Lincoln and George McClellan in the general's tent, and you could spend a half hour just looking at the details, the faces of the people and what's on the table and the tent, and then you go on and you read about that meeting. It's a wonderful calendar, and there was a lot of thought that went into this. I hope you know that. I hope you appreciate that. So it's Ken Burns' Civil War calendar for your pledge of $75. Your pledge of any amount supports WPR programs, and you do this pledging by going to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And it truly doesn't matter how much you contribute. Some people give $25 or $30, and others give thousands. You know, you have to give the amount that's affordable to you.
What's most important, of course, is that you participate by giving what you can. If you're supporting WPR, you're supporting an independent voice in the media. I mean, think about where you in the world you would be without these kinds of conversations. They wouldn't exist anywhere else. So you got to keep them alive. Go online, WPR.org, or call 888-202-2552 and make whatever financial contribution you can.
And why don't you consider making your pledge in the form of an ongoing monthly gift? You can set that up on your credit card, or even better yet, just right from your bank account. So when you make an ongoing gift, you don't have to remember to renew your support each year.
You'll be a sustaining member. Your support will be as consistent as your WPR listening month after month, year after year. Please become a sustainer now by making an ongoing gift, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we are chugging along this hour towards our goal of 60. Right now we have 12, meaning we need 48 more of you to please call in this hour or go to WPR.org. And if you want to call in, that number is 888-202-2552. 2552.
It's our half the time pledge drive. It's a short fall drive, 6 days instead of 12. Your donation will make it a success. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And why don't you ask for Ken Burns' Civil War calendar? With a pledge of $75 or more, pledge now. WPR.org. 888-202-2552.
Yeah, it's one of those wonderful premiums where it just keeps on giving because you'll learn so much more about the Civil War by looking at the picture and all the dates of things that happened. And the pictures really are extraordinary, as was his extraordinary series on the Civil War. So if I were you, I would pledge right now. I really would. I would pledge right now. Maybe I should pledge right now. This would be the time, because there's so much to it. There's so much history.
Well, you're a little busy right now, Catherine.
I know. I know. I got to talk.
You do have to talk.
Yeah.
So
all
go
right.
to
Thank
it.
You. Thank you. And joining us this hour to talk about the Wisconsin Civil War 150th Commission is Lance Hertigan, and we're welcoming phone calls for him, 800-486-8655. Chuck in Beloit is our next caller, Lance. Hi, Chuck.
Hello. Good morning. Thank you. And I encourage everyone else to contribute. I mailed mine in earlier.
Thank
but
you,
I have
Chuck.
A question. On the grounds of the state capitol, there's a statue of a man called Hans Christian Hague, and I think he was killed during the Civil War, and I wondered if you knew anything more about the gentleman.
Yeah, it's he's a very interesting man. He's foreign born, and he was a warden at the Waupun State Prison before the war, and a pretty prominent abolitionist. When the war started, he wanted to raise a regiment of Scandinavians, Norwegians, and Swedes, and that ended up being the 15th Wisconsin. And the 15th Wisconsin fought in the Battle of Chickamauga and was out in front, and the line retreated, and they were caught between the lines, and Hans Hague was shot and killed. He left a wonderful book of letters that had been translated of his war experience and his pre-war experiences, and he's a pretty prominent figure in Wisconsin's immigrant history as well as state history. So that's why they have the statue. I always thought that Jefferson Davis should be on the other side of the square, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chuck. Thanks for your call. Bruce is next in Madison. Hi, Bruce.
Hi. How are you?
Fine. How are you, Bruce?
Oh, I'm just fine. I'm stuck in traffic in Madison.
Oh, my.
Actually, a couple of my questions have been answered, specifically what happened to the Black Hat Brigade. Also, you just spoke about Hans Hague. I have been to Chickamauga many times, and he died in Vineyard Field. And it's really an absolutely amazing battlefield. I think a lot of the war in the West is overlooked. It's overshadowed by places like Gettysburg. In my opinion, the real war was fought in the West. In the East, it was all between Washington and Richmond, which is 90 miles apart. In the West, it was the terrain was much more problematic for the Union and Confederate forces. If anybody ever has a chance to go to Chattanooga and Chickamauga, it's well worth the trip. There are a lot of the Wisconsin regiments down there, and incidentally, Jefferson Davis was also, this is a different one, he was also a brigadier general in the
That's
Union
right.
Army, and he was a virulent racist, and it's kind of ironic that he ended up being a commander, a brigadier commander in the Union Army, and Hans Hague was under his command during the war. I just find, you know, there's a lot of irony in things like that.
Yeah, I think you're touching on one of those big issues that Civil War buffs argue about. Was the war won in the West or was it won in the East? And certainly the fighting in the West, and you mentioned Chickamauga and Chattanooga, another great battlefield to see is Shiloh and also Vicksburg, two very prominent issues. I always get into trouble with this. I think the South could have won the war in the East because of the public sentiment. They never were in the game in the West, of course. The West was, but the West didn't get the attention because it didn't have the newspaper coverage. of the time, and that continued after the war as well. Certainly, the Wisconsin soldiers that fought in the West were among the best soldiers. You know, what was that line about Sherman? He said he'd rather have 1,000 Wisconsin soldiers than 4,000 soldiers from any other state. And so he certainly saw that, and as I said, I think you could have won a settlement or a negotiated settlement of the Civil War in the East where the South could have won, or at least become separated as a separate country, but it just was never to be.
Sure. And what a lot of people don't realize is that the Battle of Chickamauga was a two-day battle, but it had more casualties per day than Gettysburg. It was just a nasty, nasty battle.
Yeah, it was very nasty. And, you know, Shiloh's another one of those where they say more people fought at Shiloh than at Gettysburg, too. The trouble with Gettysburg, or not the trouble, but it was a three-day battle, and, of course, that led to the casualty rates extending. It also was, you know, 70 miles from Washington, D.C., and all the newspaper coverage. And, of course, it was it just was the largest battle on North American soil. But there's much to be learned in the Western battles, and much Wisconsin has much to be proud of in the West as well as the East.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe the Army of the Potomac, the Eastern Army, never would have won without those Wisconsin soldiers in the Iron Brigade. See, now I'm really in trouble.
No, you're not in trouble at all. Thank you, Bruce, very much for the call. I'm always interested in how people get fascinated with whatever they're fascinated with, and I love your story. Amplify on it, please, becoming interested in the Civil War when your father brought home an 1864 special model 1861 Colt rifle musket from a neighbor's shed.
Yeah.
That was it. That was the moment for you.
That was it. I was so fascinated with the age of it. You know, it was probably in shooting condition, though I never fired it. But it was in good shape, but it was 1864. And I began to, out of just curiosity, read everything I could find about the Civil War. I sat in the back of my classroom, and against the wall there was a picture of where there was a bookcase, and there was a picture of history of the Civil War behind me. And the photographs still enthrall me to this day. I can't, you know, they are so touching, I think. And Ken Burns really captures them in of course, his video. History of the War.
He sure does. Yeah, he's brilliant. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. We're talking about the 150th anniversary of the Civil War, which we will be marking for the next few years, of course. Lance Hertigan, chair of Wisconsin Civil War 150th Commission, is our guest, and he has just fabulous stories in his head and that he's written down about Wisconsin soldiers in the Iron Brigade and what Wisconsin was like, and he knows the whole history of the Civil War. He's our guest. We're happy to have him here. So lines are open if you'd like to join our conversation. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are in our short pledge drive half the time. And just a reminder, because we're talking about the Civil War, for $75 pledge, we are delighted to send you a copy of The Civil War, Ken Burns, The Civil War, the 2012 Sesquicentennial Calendar. Here's a Facebook message that has come in, Lance. My grandfather, Edgar Moses, served the entire war with the 7th Wisconsin Company F. Do you have any idea how his company participated and how they distinguished themselves?
Oh, I don't have the time. Basically, the 7th Wisconsin, right?
Yes.
The 7th Wisconsin was a regiment within the Iron Brigade. It was one of the three Wisconsin regiments in the Iron Brigade. And in my thinking, it may have been the best of the three regiments.
Uh-huh.
Came into the war after the harvest in 1861 and fought to the very end, was mustered out in July of 1865. Just a great record. It had the highest number, at the end of the war, it had the highest number of killed in battle of any regiment in the Union Army, And then New Hampshire began to to change the rules about who was considered a casualty, so they moved ahead of us on the list. And the 7th Wisconsin is now third on the list of actual killed in action. So it's just a great regiment, a tough. They were known as the Huckleberries because they were always talking about huckleberry pies and good things to eat.
Oh.
But just a great, big, strong, you know, tough regiment from Wisconsin.
Oh.
Went all the way in, returned home at the end of the war. A big celebration for them in the square in Madison. Certainly a very, very proud regiment and one that is distinguished.
Oh, Catherine, you've made Catherine's day, I'm sure. Thank you for your information. Lee is next. Hi, Lee.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a what would have been a great, 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 I believe, grandfather who was in the Union Army, and he died, apparently killed by dogs, but that's what it said.
Killed by what?
A dogs. What?
Dogs.
Dogs, and I think he died at Gettysburg.
Oh.
But I was wondering about the widows, because his widow received a small pension, but also letters from each president from Roosevelt until she died. And I was wondering if you knew anything about that.
No, I've never heard that about the letters circulated. Are you talking about Teddy Roosevelt or Franklin Delano Roosevelt?
I think it was Franklin Delano Roosevelt because she
lived. Yeah, they probably what happened after the war is initially widows would receive some money from the state. In other words, the state tended to take care of them. Now it wasn't much. I mean, $5 a month or something like that. So they didn't get a lot of money from the state. But after the war, of course, the veterans began to create this the Grand Army of the Republic, which was like a veterans organization that became one of the largest groups and the most politically active groups in the country in the 1880s.
Hmm.
And they went to Congress and demanded these pensions for widows and for soldiers and orphans of soldiers. And a lot of that money was began to circulate then. They were taking care of the people that had borne the cost of the war. But I had never heard of the letters being, that's an interesting thing. I've just never seen that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for the call. Why don't you give us, please, before we have to say goodbye to you, Lance, the Wisconsin Historical Society has a fabulous website it's good. Direct us to where we can gobble up more information.
Yeah, they put up most of the Civil War records online, so you can actually search for individual names and for much material. It is probably the best site in the country for gathering information. It sometimes can be intimidating, but there is some wonderful material in there. There's a couple of really great exhibits out now. The State Historical Society has one on their museum on the square. The Wisconsin Veterans Museum across the way also has a new Civil War display, and the Civil War Museum in Kenosha, Wisconsin, has several special exhibits on the sesquicentennial. So it's been a wonderful time. We we track them for our website. In other words, when there's an event or a display or exhibits on the Civil War Wisconsin 150th, and we've had over 100 different events from state historical societies to small county historical societies, different museums and places like that. It's just it's been an interesting sesquicentennial, I think, and it's been very thoughtful, I think, not a real glorification of the war, but a recognition of how significant it was and the sacrifices made and an awareness of it.
Mm-hmm. How significant it was. Lance, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Lance Hertigan, chair of the Wisconsin Civil War Commission. He's author of Those Damn Black Hats, The Iron Brigade in the Gettysburg Campaign. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and Chrissy Peace has joined me in our studios. This is listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio. We are in our half-the-time pledge drive. Hello, Chrissy.
Hi, Kathleen. And as you've heard, we have cut our fall drive down from 12 days to just 6. And this is it. We're here. It's happening right now. Be a part of this half-the-time drive with your gift of $50 or $100 at WPR.org or 888 888- 202-2552. You make this shorter drive possible.
And think of $75, and then we will send you Ken Burns' Civil War calendar, which is a great calendar. We're looking to get 37 pledges in the next, not too many minutes, 8 minutes. Oh, we got to get rolling. Your pledge will help keep this program going strong and help us keep this drive short, only 6 days instead of 12. Make your contribution, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you've been enjoying the conversation with Lance Hertigan about the sesquicentennial of the Civil War, one of the only places I can think of that you would hear such a conversation.
Nowhere else. Right.
So please take a few minutes and make this hour and many hours to come possible. Put a value on the programs you enjoy every day and then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You decide the amount of your pledge. Every pledge, of course, deeply appreciated. Every pledge will help pay for the programs that you love on Wisconsin Public Radio. Consider asking for Ken Burns' Civil War calendar as your thank you gift when you give $75 or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you might be wondering what your pledge pays for. That's a completely legitimate question. Well, let me tell you, we have toll-free numbers so you can call in with your questions. We rely on newspapers, magazine subscriptions. We still get the physical copies. We have internet services, and so we can research the topics of the day. All of these things and so many more, they have costs. Your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 helps pay for all that.
Not many radio stations can claim to inform, inspire, and engage their listeners, but we do. These values are at the core of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's a place to discuss and debate the issues, a place to examine the past, and really to imagine the future.
And don't think of it as something we do for you. Think of it as something you do for yourself and your community. Because listener support is what makes this all possible, please contribute now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
This hour you can receive Ken Burns' Civil War calendar when you make a contribution of $75. Your donation supports the programs you love. You will also get this very nice thank you gift with your pledge of $75. Pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You've probably heard the expression, less is more. Well, we've applied this idea to our fall fundraiser. It's called the Half the Time Pledge Drive. We've cut the drive down from the usual 12 days to just 6. Less fundraising means more programming for you. But the only way it works is if you give now. Here's how.
And you go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And Kathleen, we might be biased. I don't know who would accuse us of that, but we think radio is the perfect form of media.
It is.
Because it complements everything else you're doing.
It does.
Just want to sit on the couch and listen, gosh, you can.
But you don't have to. Unlike TV or reading, you can drive while listening to the radio. You can get ready for work. You can be in the park with your dog. You can clean the house, go jogging, whatever.
Radio's great. It doesn't drain your energy.
Mm-hmm.
It adds to and enriches everything else you're doing. Wisconsin Public Radio is listener-supported radio. Your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 helps keep it all going.
And if you listen to WPR on your way to work, on your way home every day, and an hour or two each weekend, you're listening more than 700 hours a year. Woo-hoo.
So today, if you've never given before, we're asking you to please consider a first-time gift of $5 a month. Very reasonable. $5 a month for hundreds of hours of listening. That makes WPR one of the best information and entertainment bargains you'll find anywhere. Give now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
All it takes is a gift of a dollar or two a week and a few minutes of your time. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And one of the things I like to think about, and we talked about it in the 9 o'clock hour, how much do you spend on coffee every morning? Or soda, if that's your caffeine kick? Or going out to lunch? It's a couple bucks every pop, right? Why not consider giving some of that to Wisconsin Public Radio? It'll add up. It'll make a big difference to us. So please make your contribution. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And please give as generously as you can.
I did bring my coffee today so we can go out to lunch with John Munson, who came down from
Such
Superior.
A treat.
Yeah. So those are the payoffs, right? Please pledge this hour too. Those of you who were on our trip with us to Washington and to Gettysburg, this is a Ken Burns sesquicentennial calendar of the Civil War. And for everybody who's vitally interested in this crucial time in American history, I would pledge this hour if I were you to get this calendar because the pictures are quite extraordinary. And, then you can go on with the information so that you're listening to us. You got the calendar, you got books, you got the internet. You keep learning and learning and learning more about the Civil War. It's a good thing. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Oh, we have to say goodbye pretty soon.
We do.
Yeah.
That's sad. But, I mean, for example, you can give, like Richard from Winnebago, who said, Kathleen Dunn represents all the best of public radio. I don't know if you heard it, but the John Katz program last Thursday, he says it could not have touched a heart any more than it did mine. So if, like Richard from Winnebago, this show, this network touches you, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Thanks, Chrissy. Chrissy Pease. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning, as always. Terrific producers. Thanks for your pledges. Thanks to John Munson for coming to see us here in Milwaukee. And thanks for pledging WPR.org. We'll be with you tomorrow.